The Torah describes Yaakov leaving Beersheba and going to Haran. Passing it out, the Torah says, "Vayifka b'mokom, vayolin shom kigo hashemesh, vayikach meyav b'mokom v'yosem v'ashosem, vayishka b'mokom ahu." Chazal derived in the Gemara in Brachos in the fourth parak from the word "vayifka" that refers to tefillah. Kayadua, Rashi quotes the Gemara that Yaakov was nesaking the tefillah of Maariv. And the limud is from the word vayifka. You also know that the other two avos were nesaking also two other tefillos. Avim Avinu was nesaking tefillah shachris. How do Chazal derive it? Also from one word. It says vayashkim avim b'bokir l'avokim asher omat sham es b'nei Hashem. The Gemara says, "Ein amida la tefila." Shenemar vayamo pinchas vayepalda. Amida also refers to tefila. In the case of Avraham, we're talking about tefila shachris. And with reference to Yitzchak at the end of Chayisara, the Torah says Yitzchak was nesake in tefila smincha. Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach chasod. Ein sicha el tefila. There's no doubt that these three words. The word Vayivka that's found vis-a-vis Yaakov Avinu, the word Sicha found with Yitzchak, and Amida found with Avraham, really, I would say, very much reflect the very personalities of the individuals who are associated with them. Avraham Avinu, to a large extent, was embedded in his Amida, his perseverance, standing his ground despite enormous difficulties. Chazal say, Rashi quotes it, he was able to create a front, and clearly he was able to essentially take on the entire world, entire civilization. I already mentioned the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, the Rambam describes he was surrounded by Ovdei Avodah Zarah, including members of his own family, and Avraham Avinu was the one who discovered Hashem Yisbarach, the notion of monotheism, Hashem Echad, Shmo Echad, and it's really amazing that he was able to literally tackle and take on the entire world. And that's all expressed in one word, the word Amida. Asher Omad Shem Es Bnei Hashem. Yitzchak is a totally different personality. Yitzchak, Chazal speak of someone who is really almost entirely concealed. We don't really know much about his personality. The Torah does not reveal to us. Even in the dialogue that we have with Yitzchak, there are very few dialogues. We don't find that Yitzchak is the Kariv. He's not spreading the wealth, as it were, the way Avraham Avinu did. Yitzchak is an Olah Tmima, can't leave Eretz Yisrael. He's a pure carbon. Yitzchak is a rather dutiful kind of son, otherwise he would not have submitted to the Akedah. And if anything, because we know little about Yitzchak, the word that really describes him is Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach. Sicha refers to intimate conversation. Based on the Gemara Chagiga, since you like that Gemara, the Gemara says on the pasuk Magid Adam Masecho Afilu Sicha Kala Shebenish LeIshto Maginu Lo B'Shas Adin. Sicha refers to intimate conversation, and Sicha essentially is someone who is very private, someone who is really, to a large extent, secluded from the world. The third Av, which of course is Yaakov Avinu. Here again, the word, I believe, is very pregnant, very saturated with meaning. The word vayifka b'mokom, vayifka implies mairiv. And mairiv, of course, is a time of darkness. Well, I mean, the other writes in the second brachas describing the distinction between mincha and mairiv. But Yaakov Avinu, unquestionably, as you know, his entire life, one of vayifka. Vayifka implying constant confrontation. Yaakov, of course, in this week's parasha, whom does he confront?
Lava.
And then we know that Yaakov Avinu subsequently, the beginning of Vayishlach, he's confronting Esav. Yaakov's entire life is one of confrontation. And therefore, Vayifka, which literally means to bump into, if you will, very much describes Yaakov Avinu. So we have three verbs, and those three verbs are incredibly telling. Very, very significant, because they really reflect each of the three avos that we are describing. Avraham Avinu, in terms of his Amida, his perseverance, his tenacity, his ability to discover Hashem and take on the entire world. Yitzchak with a certain privacy, seclusion, isolation, intimate conversation, that sicha, that tefillas mincha, And Yaakov Avinu, the one who confronts the world, Keseda, confrontation after confrontation, all embedded in the word Vayivka. Yeah.
Do the words describe the prayers themselves also?
I believe they do. But that would require a lot more arichus, but just the kitzur nimratz. Tefillah of Shacharis, of course, is a tefillah when a person is, shall we say, wide awake. You have woken up in the morning, you are fresh as a daisy, you're able to confront Hashem from a very rather clear kind of perspective. That's Amida of Avraham Avinu. Sicha, which represents Mincha, Mincha of course is a kind of twilight zone. It's in the Sefer actually. The Rav points out regarding Tzulas Mincha, Mincha is usually in the middle of the day, people are working, and it really is a major act of Mesiras Nefesh that a person should take time off from his material acquisitions to daven Mincha. So in some respects it reflects the kind of inner commitment and inner, shall we say, courage that a person has to muster in order to daven Mincha. Perhaps that's embedded in Tzicha. Mayer is darkness, Mayer is Golos, Mayer is Choshech. We're talking about that's Vayivka. We're confronting the elements, the environment, and there's a lot to say about. I'm just Bekitzer since you asked the question. So therefore I felt the need to respond, but I believe that what you're saying is definitely correct. Each of these verbs reflect very much the particular tefillah that's associated with it. Yeah.
But also by Avraham, we said that he's confronting the world. Right?
He is.
So confronting would be the same thing as by God, like we said by Yaakov.
No, no. It's a different type of confrontation. Yaakov Avinu, in his confrontations, he falters. Yaakov Avinu, I would say, in many respects, he does not succeed. He fails. He falters. He is involved constantly in what seems to be behavior, even of a kind of very problematic nature. Avraham Avinu is, shall we say, determined, tenacious, convinced beyond convincing, two totally different approaches. I will describe it. I have an essay I wrote about Yaakov Avinu, about 30 pages, where I describe this Vayivka element, which is, I believe, very much his personality. I want to share with you, even perhaps since you raised the subject, I heard from my Rebbe, Rav Nissim Alpatz, Chassad Devracha, beginning of the parasha, something incredibly striking. The Torah says that Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva, which means he's leaving Eretz Yisrael, leaving his home. Anyone who leaves their home, who has to wander, go into Golos, that's a very frightening and harrowing kind of experience, no question about it. And now take a look at the psukim, the first two or three psukim, that describe this departure. Vayetze, vayelech, there are a lot of verbs here. But Yud Aleph, vayivka b'amokom, next verb. Vayolen shom, next verb. Vayikach me'am de'amokom, next verb. Vayosem me'ashosov, next verb. Vayishka b'amokom ahu, and finally, vayachalom. So my Rebbe suggested, and he of course really built it and developed this idea very beautifully, the picture here is of a person who is forsaken and forlorn. Why did Yaakov Avinu leave Be'er Sheva? Because who is hot on his tails? Who is pursuing him? Esav, the end of last week's parasha. It's clear Esav has in mind to, shall we say, eliminate him, to do a mafioso job. And the Torah says Yaakov was compelled to leave. Matter of fact, the Haftarah is much more graphic and descriptive relating to this matter. The pasuk says that, here it says, Vayivrach Yaakov. What does the Haftarah say? In the Hosea, Perek Yud Beis, Vayivrach Yaakov Stearot. He ran for his life. He was a fugitive. He was someone who was a refugee, was compelled to flee, and he essentially is running away from a Makom Kadosh, from his parents, in the prime years of his life. He goes to Charan, Vayela Charana. Say Chazal, the word Charan represents a place there, which is Charon Afshal Makom, Lashon the Medrash. Charon Afshal Makom, the anger of Hashem is constantly focused on that spot, for obvious reasons, because who's there? A bunch of shysters, scheming, sniveling types. Lavan and company. Maybe I'll talk about that also while I'm at it. But while I'm here, the Torah continues. Bayiv gaba moko. Chazal say he bumped into the place. The world was like a wall to him. Bayom and shom. Rashi calls him Chazal. What happened? It doesn't say kivo Hashemesh bayom and shom. The Torah reverses it. What's the order? Bayom and shom. He decides to remain there. Kivo Hashemesh. So of course, what did Chazal point out? It should have been reversed. Mashma, that what happened? Shkiyas Sacham occurred suddenly, earlier before its time. The sun set before its time. He's forced to stay there, and he finds himself to be in a Makom Sakona, surrounded by Chayas Rolos and Listing, and what have you. All types of people who are basically savages and the like. And in order to defend himself, Vayikach Me'avnei HaMakom, what does he take for his defense? stones. They become a kind of, he sets up a bulwark, a kind of perimeter around him, and he's compelled to stay there, and Yaakov thought essentially he's going to die. But what has saved the Jew in Galus? One word, Vayachlo. The dream of coming back to Eretz Yisrael. I love this drasha. My Rebbe, Rabbi Samal, is in the time of the bracha. The dream of returning, shall we say, going back home, and Yaakov to a large extent is the prototype of the Jew in Galus. Because anyone who knows anything about Galus, which you all know, you study Jewish history, they don't require a doctorate, that's for sure. Certainly, the story of Jews in Galus is a story of unquestionably Jews who prospered in Galus. The Halavidah should continue to prosper, that's for sure. But quite often, after a period of time, the Jew discovers that there's anti-Semitism in the world, venom that's directed against him. Our reality is one of rejection and trouble and forlornness. Our hopes and aspirations die quickly, and often we're compelled to move to another area, find another Galus. And the only thing that saved Klal Yisrael in Galus was one thing, the dream. Vayachalo. We have a different reality. Even though, perhaps I'll interpret it, my feet are planted on terra firma, but where is my mind and my heart? Hashamayma, in the heavens. I dream of a different reality. Namely, I dream that I'm in the Beis HaMikdash, I'm bringing Kavanos, I'm living in Eretz Yisrael. This is how my Rebbe interpreted beautifully the psukim in the beginning of Pasuk Vayetzeh. We have a whole series of verbs, and then we have a series of verbs together, trouble. That's what you should know. Last week, by the way, we had a similar situation, if you remember. I think I discussed it in the context of the Ramban. Namely, when Esav sold the Bechorah to Yaakov, how does the term describe it over there? In Perek Chav Hei Pasuk Lamedalit. The Yaakov Nasan Esav Lechem Zira Noshim. Bayochal, Bayesh, Bayokom, Bayelach, Bayives. A short series of staccato verbs found consecutively one after the next, which describe essentially an individual who is tired of life. Esav is tired of life. He is bored. He suffers from ennui. He wants to essentially leave this world. What's the point? Because anyone who simply pursues a material kind of lifestyle, inevitably that person is going to be frustrated, is going to be disgruntled, disillusioned, disappointed, and that's all embedded in Vayochal, Vayesh, because even the so-called porridge, red porridge, that Esav was zochet to have clearly did not satisfy him, and the Ramban describes him as the classic Zola Basomi, the classic short-term gratification fellow. Everything is short-term gratification. Shawarma tonight, pizza the next day. What else? Steak. What else?
Strawberry shortcake. Strawberry shortcake.
Strawberry shortcake, which I happen to like. Anyway, but that leads to Vayizeh. Vayivez Esav Asabachora. Anyway, I'm back to Vayetzeh. You have a series of verbs. Here also you have a similar kind of interpretation that I really actually suggested. Yes, Ari.
I just, another place that, where when Rivka told Yaakov to go get the different things, it also had a set of verbs.
Namely?
I was wondering if that was also God.
Yeah, what kind?
It was...
Perek Kav Zayin Pasuk Yud Dalet. Perek Kav Zayin Pasuk Yud Dalet. There, the Torah says. Very good. Well said. Okay, there, obviously, the intention is to carry out his mother's instructions. Very good. Excellent. Here, obviously, there's a kind of frenetic activity that's taking place. There, also, I would interpret it in a similar kind of fashion. Very good. Let me see a series of verbs. By the way, this klal is not mine. It's found in the Parshonei Hamikra. They mentioned it already, and I've heard this from my rabbeim in the course of years. Okay, I want to now just continue and perhaps describe a little bit the personality of Lavan. And I would like to describe it in the context of a famous line of the Agada, which we're all familiar with. Namely, V'Lavan Bikesh La'akor Esakol. Anyone remember that line of the Agada? It's a famous line. Does anyone here say the Haggadah on Pesach? Oh, Hashem. There's hope. Do you call that line? That Lavan Bikesh Lakar Asakol. No one knows what that line means. Simply interpreted.
Sounds like a rhyme.
What?
He wanted to uproot everything.
He wanted to uproot everything. What does that mean? So maybe I'll share with you two pshatim, and that'll be the end of the shiur. But it's well worth it. Even though I had something else to say, but that would take another hour and a half. I'll share with you two pshat. First, the pshut of Shal Mikra is the following. What is the meaning of those cryptic words? Lavan bikesh lakar esakol. He wanted to uproot everything. It's a very famous line in the Agadah. Even a cursory glance at the personality of Lavan reveals, as I said a moment ago, a scheming, venal, hustler type. To get my general gist, replete with avarice and greed. That's the very nature of his persona. You know what I'm talking about? They told me that my sefer requires a dictionary together with it. It's not true.
A reference table.
Our first encounter with Lavan, let's look back at Lavan. If you remember, Lavan, of course, appears when? In the Pasha Chayisar, in the context of the search of Eliezer, the devoted servant of Avram, for a wife, for Yitzhak. When Lavan hears the account of his sister Rivka, that's the sound of the Pasuk, and what does he say when he sees the jewelry? That's how the Torah describes it. Let's take a look at the Pesukim. Look at the Pesukim over there, and you'll see the moment that Lavan. Let's read the Pasuk first. It's good I always to see everything inside, if possible. Here it is. Perek Chavdal Pasuk Lamed. You have Chavdal Lamed? Those you have a Chumash? There the Torah describes when Eliezer is repeating the story. So it says, Vayikiros Anezem Yasatzvidim Adya Achoso. That was given to her by whom? By Lavan. Ushama Sime Rivka Achoso Lemo Kodibe Elai Aish. By the way, the previous pasuk, Ulavivka Ach Ushma Lavan, Bayavat Lavan Elaish, Hachutza Eloyim. The Torah indicates that, of course, how is Lavan always described? Ruts. He's constantly running. That's why I said it's a hustle. That's what the Torah describes, and I'll show you a bit later again. After Eliezer, because Eliezer recounted the entire saga, what had transpired, and the unbelievable Siyata Dishmaya, he said that he would like an answer regarding the Shidduch. So the Torah records right away that Lavan and Mesua, what do they respond? They respond, Me Hashem Yatza Adavar. I spoke about this several weeks ago. Namely, that Shiduchim are all Me Hashem. Take a look at the Pasuk that indicates that. Perek of Dalin, Pasuk Nun. We can't say anything because it's clear it's Yad Hashem that's involved over here. Take her means apparently they are masking to the Shidduch. The Torah then subsequently, as I said, continues on this vein. But before that, I just want to mention in Pasuk Nun, who appears before whom? So why does Lavan appear before Psuel? How are they related, Lavan and Psuel? Or are they related?
Father and son.
Father and son. Father and son. Who's the father? Psuel. So who should speak first?
Psuel.
So what does Rashi say?
Russia.
Russia. The Kafet Salashim in the oven. He was a Russia. That Lavan. By the way, when you see something similar, also in Tanakh, perhaps you can remember, in Megillas Esther, by Haman, you have a similar... Right, he speaks before Achashverosh, Mikan Shehedyo, Kovet Berosh. Similar Rashi to the Rashi over here. Whatever the case is, it's clear that Lavan is a Rasha. And then, as I said, Eliezer, in Pasuk Nun Gimel over there, he plies Rivka with silver and gold utensils and clothing and gives presents to her brother and her father. Rather, not her brother and her father, her brother and her mother. What happened to her father?
Died.
He died. How did he die?
Malach.
I'm sorry?
Malach.
A Malach came and...
Switch the drinks,
and he was poisoned. Whose idea was to poison whom? The Pesuel, actually, Rashi quotes, I believe, in Pasuk Nun Hey, says Rashi, Pesuel Heichan Hoya, Ratzel Akev, he wanted to stop the whole Shidduch, Uba Malach, and the Malach came, member of the Mafia, and simply eliminated him. Whatever the case is, subsequently, Eliezer stays overnight, the Torah says, and in the morning wants to go on his way. The Torah says that Rivka's brother and mother, they say, no. What do they say? Pasuk Nun Hey. Vayomer Achia v'ima teshev anar itonu yomer ha'asar. Let us stay a little bit for a period of time. And again, the Torah says, who speaks first? Vayomer Achia v'ima. Who speaks first? Lavan. He seems to be the gentleman, if you can call him that, who's directing traffic, but he speaks before his mother. He has absolutely no kibud avayim, no de'acharetz whatsoever. It's not just his father, it's his mother as well. At least he's lo plug. That's his position. And by the way, the reaction, of course, is Vayom Aleim Al Teachar Olsi Vashem Yisliach Darki Shalchuni Ve'echol Adoni. Let me go on my merry way. And so what do they say? Vayom Rum Nikra Lanara V'Nishalo Es Pia. Essentially, what are they doing? Or what is Lavan actually doing? Because even though it's both of them, Nikra Lanara V'Nishalo Es Pia, but essentially Lavan is now engaged in what? Delaying tactics. Clearly he does not want Rivka to leave, and he's trying to delay the shidduch, or delay the journey of Eliezer. The Torah continues, Vayivka l'Rivka, Vayivka l'Rivka, about next pasuk, look at the next pasuk, Vayivka l'Rivka, Vayomer Eileh Aselchi v'Ish Hazeh, will you go with this person? Vayitomer Eileh, she said yes. And as a result, they're compelled to go ahead, Vayishalcha s'Rivka achosim v'zmenitza, Yesemer Avon, Yesanosha. Interesting, I just to point out, the next pasuk, which is Samech, Vayivarch HaSvivka, Vayomulah, Achoseinu, Atayili Alfer Baba. This is a pasuk that said where? When people get married by the Badeke. Are you familiar with Badeke? When they cover the Kala, which according to Nadi Yehuda is a chelik of the chuppah, as alleged, was very makpid that there should be Edim, we should witness that as well. So we say that. There's a very fascinating comment found in the parish of the Tzibel HaTorah based on the Gemara of Abasa, of course, my favorite Gemara. But the Gemara points out actually that on this pasuk, the Gemara says, Rob banim domim lachiyayim. Most children are similar to whom? To the brother or the mother. So what in effect did Laban give a bracha to Rivka? He told her, Halavah, you should have children just like whom? Just like me. Namely, venal types, hustlers, greedy, full of avarice, and the like. That's just Derech Agav. I continue. So then they go on their merry way, and our next encounter with Lavan is now in this week's Pasha. So let's start this week's Pasha. In Vayetze, there Yaakov, of course, encounters at the well the shepherds. Another very well-known Pasha in Perech Abtes. Of course, Yaakov asked them as to their knowledge of Lavan. They say that from Choron Pasukei. Do you know Laban? And they said, yeah, we know him. We know him well. Which, of course, I like to interpret. Homiletically, we know him with all of his scheming and all his venality. Yaakov subsequently inquires as to his welfare. Yes, he's doing quite well. And lo and behold, who appears in the scene? His daughter Rachel. Yaakov then, of course, when he sees Rachel, and then he uncovers the stone from the mouth of the well, and he gives the flock water to drink. Interestingly enough, has the Torah describe Rachel? Pasigut. Vayi. Kasher ra Yaakov is Rachel. Bas Laban achima. Isn't that fascinating? The Torah describes her as what? The daughter of Laban, his mother's brother. Not only that, the flock belongs to whom? V'yatzon Laban Achimo. This guy, I would say, is a very possessive kind of fellow, to say the least. The Torah is alluding to his possessiveness by, number one, describing Rachel as being literally owned by him. Number two, the flock is also owned by him. And that's the sense that the Torah is trying to convey.
His sister also.
Correct? 100%. That love is a very possessive personality, which we'll see he certainly is. And then, when Yaakov subsequently, in Pasuk Yud Beis, by Yaakov the Rachel ki achi avihu, he informs Rachel of his consanguinity to her. That means he's a relative. He's a karov mishpacha. Both of his daughter, he's a karov. So she quickly runs. Whom does she run to? Batarats, batagi li avia. Whom does she run to? Lavan. Why is that, by the way? Rashi says, her mother died. And the only one she had to tell was her father. Whatever the case is, the moment Laban hears of the arrival of Yaakov, look at the next pasuk, unbelievable pasuk. Vayishma Laban Hashem Yaakov and Achoso, he hears about the arrival of Yaakov's nephew, he runs to greet him. Vayarats likroso. And then Vayechabeklo, Vayenashiklo, Vayevieo Beso. You know what they say? Methinks the lady protesteth too much. What does he do? He hugs him, he kisses him, he is enveloping him from every possible standpoint and brings him to his home. Again, one is by association reminded of Laban's earlier encounter with Eliezer when he exhibited the same kind of behavior. He ran to greet him. Of course, why did he run to greet Eliezer, if you recall? Correct, because he was also laden down with all kinds of goodies. And Rashi citing Chazal. Take a look at Rashi over here. Bayar Tzikrasa, Pasuk Yigimel. Kasabir Mamaru Taun Shari Evan Abayis, Babakam Basar Gimalam Tunim. And obviously, he's the same. Bayachabek. He hugged him. He saw he doesn't have anything. Shemazahu, maybe Vainam Bechayko. Maybe he's hiding them in his bosom. Vainashiklo. Maybe he has them in his mouth.
It's a close family.
Close family, correct? Unquestionably. And then Laban indicates to Yaakov that you are my flesh and blood. Pasuk Gedalet. Vayavad Laban Ach Atzmi Yusariyata. We are close mishpacha. We are obviously clearly related. And Yaakov remains there for a month. That's a Pasuk Gedalet. Laban then invites Yaakov to negotiate terms of employment. They're so close. He wants to show, of course, his sense of morality and fair play. The Pasuk Tezvav. Achi, achi ata, look at that introduction. You are my brother. Should you work gratis? Let's go ahead and negotiate wages in terms of employment. And then the Torah continues, actually. It says, he had two daughters, Shem Agdola Leah, Shem Akhtana Rachel, Leah Leah Rakos, Rachel Isa, Yifastor, Yifasmer, Derech Agav. For those who have a lot of time in their hands and good knowledge of Hebrew, there is a beautiful, absolutely gorgeous, beyond belief article by Maran Harav Zatzal, that's Harav Soloveitchik, in a sefer that has on it a picture of the shofar outside, called Besod Siach HaShofar. You know what I'm talking about. Sometimes it comes in orange, sometimes it comes in green. There are two colors. So for those who need, shall we say, multi-hued and multicolored presentations, you have two possibilities. Anyway, in that sefer, there's a gorgeous article on Rachel and Leah, which I suggest you read, because it's a description of two personalities and two tipusin that I really, Rav Soloveitchik develops them and develops the idea very beautifully. Anyway, it's in the Beis Medrash. If you wish, I'll show it to you. And if you even really wish for me to learn it together with you, Shai Weinstein Shlita, I'll be glad to do so. Since you expressed an interest, I'll try to do it. Please, Nether. When Yaakov indicates his willingness to work 7 years for the hand of Rachel in marriage, so of course, Laban acquiesces. And then what does he proceed to do?
Trick him.
He proceeds to dupe Yaakov by substituting Leah for Rachel on his wedding night. This really requires 3 hours of discussion. It's just one of the most fascinating topics to me. There's a beautiful medrash that I remember that Rav Soloveitchik's Ren Lebracha used to quote. The medrash indicates that that night, when Yaakov, of course, is with whom? He's with Leah as opposed to Rachel. The whole night there's like an echo of Malachim singing, Hoi Leah, Hoi Leah, like in the background. And of course Yaakov doesn't get it. And without getting into the details of Dushay Tos, it's described both Al Pi Halacha, there are issues, and Al Pi Hashkafa, there are issues. There are a lot of issues. But whatever the case is,
there was a marriage?
What?
Or there was actually a marriage, like a Metas Tos? Yeah.
They discuss it. You know who talks about this probably? Avashe Weiss, Agoin Avashe Weiss. I'm not into his svarim, but I was actually given his svarim by someone in my shul as a matana. I really should look at it. I think accidentally I did look at it once and I saw this topic discussed. Dushay Tos. So it's a very fascinating topic. But it says that, notice that Yaakov works for Rachel, and of course it's no time. Pasuk Chav. Vayavod Yaakov Rachel Shem Hashanim, Vayu Be'enu Kiyom Machadim Yavos Lo'osa. By the way, just to look at how Lavan, how he sees marriage in Pasuk Yutes, Yaakov loves Rachel. Vayom Lavan, Tov Titzio Solach, Mititio Sol Ishacher. Better I should give her to you than give her to somebody else. Wow, what a beautiful way of looking at a marriage. It means you are, how shall we put it? You know, they have it from the Chazanish. The Chazanish says in Eretz Yisrael, they talk about here, about voting. You know, in the Haredi world, they want people to vote as well. So why should they vote? It's a question. Can you vote if you recognize the government, don't recognize the government, view Israel as a sovereign entity, not a sovereign entity? So why should, whatever the case is, the Chazanish says, the klal is, vote for whom? Bechar b'miyot Torah. The least of all the evils. They're all evil. So at least try to get the least of all the evils in. It's amazing. That's essentially how he views it. They're all evil. As far as I'm concerned, she shouldn't be marrying you either. But better to give it to you than to give it to some other tchotchke bacha. Whatever the case is, the next day, of course, he accuses him of deception, gross deception. What does Laban do? Not my fault. You know what? You don't understand. Pasuk Chavav, lo yasechem min kamei. We have min hogi amakom here. we have, shall we say, mores. We have a certain kind of, shall we say, local rules and customs. We can't, chas v'shalom, violate the custom. Lasei satzeira, if they have a chira, the older sibling, marrying before the other sibling. Of course, this rationalization was only trumpeted it after the egregious, deceitful act of switching wives. You know, people often, after they behave like a bunch of skunks, then they rationalize their behavior. We know this. We have many, many outstanding politicians in this country who are experts in this kind of behavior. First they act like skunks, and then they rationalize their behavior. Chas v'shalom. Here they have a beautiful expression. Anashim mitapsim al ilan gadol, ilan gavoa, you know the Hebrew a little bit. They climb up on a tree, and then they can't down. The way to get down was to say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Chas v'shalom. That a politician should say, to'iti, aviti, pashati, chatosam. Instead, what do? They rationalize their behavior. Of course, I say this about the Oslo Accords. They've yet to admit that they made a mistake. Yet to admit it. Anyone know what the Oslo Accords are? Yes.
There are accords that were done in the 90s that basically gave away parts of Eretz Yisrael.
That's it.
And also, they were supported by Major Gedolei Hadar.
What was supported by Major Gedolei Hadar?
Rabbi Yosef and Aron Rubenstein are listed in the same people who supported that at the time.
Yeah, I won't respond to that right now because it needs too much time. Yes.
It's the president for Israel giving away more land in like the future and saying we don't have a right over certain places.
And for what? Why do we do so? Because we're going to get for it, as Arik Sharon said, security and bitachon and shalom. You notice what we have now. Security and bitachon and shalom. Isn't it absolutely Shangri-La? And yet, they've yet to admit that they...
Translation,
honky-dory. Correct? Have to translate that too. And they've yet to admit that they even made a mistake. They cannot admit anything because politicians don't have the ability to say, I'm sorry. They can't get off the tree without finding some rationalization. Lovin certainly fits that bill beautifully. He's a skunk par excellence, and he acts in this incredibly deceitful way of switching wives, and yet he has to rationalize. Let me just, one more thing. After the birth of Yosef, so Yaakov is ready to leave the house of Lovin a bit later, also in this pasha. Oh, we also have to discuss this too. The story of the mandrakes. Oh, that needs a few hours. But whatever the case, do da'im, if you remember. Do you ever learn Chumash? There's something called the Pentateuch. 5 books of Moses. Given at Mount Sinai, not the hospital. Anyway, at one point in time, after the birth of Yosef, Yaakov is ready to leave the house of Laban, and he asks him formally for permission. Laban now was reluctant to permit him to leave. Why? Why did Laban not want him to leave? Very simply, because Chazal comments. I just want to read the psukim paths that are relevant just to show you that Laban realized that any prosperity he merited was due to what? To Yaakov Avinu. Rashi quotes from Chazal. So then Yaakov then goes ahead and informs him of extraordinary devotion. This, by the way, is one of the most beautiful psukim that is found in Tanakh, and a pasuk that describes how Yaakov Avinu worked. And of course, you, I assume, are familiar with this pasuk. It's quoted by the Rambam, quoted in Shulchan Aruch actually, by the Rambam at the end of the Chasirus, and also quoted in Shulchan Aruch how someone should work. I remember years ago, I grew up actually in New York City, and I used to watch from time to time people working on the potholes in New York City. New York City has no shortage of potholes, like every Dalaramis, and the major highways and the streets as well. And people used to come and work on the potholes. And usually, every 15 minutes, they took a coffee break. They worked for 5 minutes, coffee break for 20 minutes, worked for 5 minutes, coffee break for 20 minutes. I used to observe them when I was a little kid, not to do it myself. And this is exactly how one should not work, of course. As a matter of fact, there's a pasuk here that I want to show you where Yaakov Avinu describes how he worked. Look in Perek Lamed Aleph. One of the most famous psukim in Tanakh. Pasuk Mem. Yaakov Avinu says, "Hayisi bayom acholani chorev." During the day, it was basically chorev. Chorev means what?
Disaster.
How do you translate that?
Disaster.
No, no. In this context, it doesn't mean that. During the day, acholani chorev, it was literally in a shrav situation. Shrav means it was hot. Bikerach baloilo. What is it like at nighttime?
Cold.
Freezing. He was 24/7 on the job. When he watched the flock of Lavan, he was basically 24/7. No Eser Hadas. Unbelievable devotion. The Rambam, by the way, writes in Hilchos Chiras, I hear from the Rav Zechariah Lebracha, the only time the Rambam uses this expression in all Mishnah Torah, Sharei Yaakov Atzadik. That's his lashon. Yaakov Atzadik. Avad bechol kochah. That's what he writes. Ki bechol kochi avadat yisavichem. So Yaakov basically works out an arrangement that was to the advantage, of course, of Lavan, as you probably know. He succeeds wondrously in this arrangement. I'm not getting into the discussion of the Nekudim Brudim. I wrote once a paper on genetics on that topic, and since then many books have been written on it, but I wrote this paper for a genetics course in Yeshiva University approximately 40 years ago, and the paper is literally full of Amaratza Shein Kamo. I even still have a copy of it, and I got an A for it. Whatever the case is, Yaakov succeeds wondrously in this arrangement, and the reaction of the sons of Laban, how do they react? That you are a thief. And then Yaakov tells his wives of his decision to leave the house of Laban and openly professes his impeccable honesty, his dedication, Laban's duplicity and trickery in terms of the compensation owed to him. And then what happens was that Yaakov, Vayirach, he flees from the house of Laban, and then what happens? So let's read that Sukkim. Pasuk Chavalef, Lamed Aleph. Vayirach hu b'chal ha'shelo. Here we have a clear statement of his running. Yaakov, he finds out, he pursues him, and finally Hashem comes to Laban and tells him, don't you dare touch Yaakov. Pasuk Abdallah. And the Torah actually then has a rather fascinating speech on the part of Laban. This is classic sanctimonious piety. But let me just finish this, Shai. First he accuses Yaakov of what? Gnevas Das. What does Gnevas Das mean? You are a duplicitous, deceitful. You, Yaakov, are a duplicitous, deceitful kind of person. You essentially, what did you do with my daughters? You kidnapped them. Why did you go ahead and run away in such a fashion, surreptitiously? Had you told me, what would I have done? I would have sent you away with a seven-piece orchestra. You didn't even give me a chance to kiss my children goodbye. And those, he is the tzaddik yisod edom. Unbelievable how everything is turned upside down. What a tchotchke this lover is. And Laban says, I could have harmed you. The pasuk says here in Chavtes, Yeshlehel Yodi Lasos Imachem Ra, but somebody appeared to me and told me, don't you dare. By the way, when he's talking about I would have harmed you, or could have harmed you, who is he talking about? His own son-in-law. But the Almighty intervened and told me to desist. And then he accuses Yaakov, of course, of stealing whom? Stealing his gods. And after a thorough and comprehensive search that reveals nothing, Yaakov finally launches an impassioned response to Laban, where he underscores his unbelievable honesty and integrity. Look at Pasuk Lamed Vav. This is the first time we find Yaakov reacting to Laban. Next Pasuk. 20 years I worked for you day and night. And on and on and on. And what's Laban's response to all this? What does Laban say? Does he acknowledge even a small amount of dastardly behavior? He's like the politicians. No different. He remains on his high horse. This guy is possessive from here to Chinatown. The daughters are my daughters, the sons are my sons, the flock is my flock. Everything is mine. Essentially, what are you? You are but a blankety-blankety thief. By the way, I don't suggest you speak to your son-in-law like that. I don't think it's too healthy. But this is exactly what's happening. Go ahead, Jaya.
Why did Yaakov flee?
Because I will discuss that, but I can only discuss it probably at a later time. But kitzur, it seems to me that Yaakov realized that he cannot live in this kind of environment with people who are deceitful and people who are thieves, people who are treacherous, people who are dishonest. What?
The Bronx.
People who are skunks and the like. I think that's the main reason why he decided that he has to get out of this kind of environment. But let me just mention to you the subsequent pact that's consummated between Yaakov and Laban. Is like a Musa shmuz that Laban gives to Yaakov. This is the Musa shmuz here. Paraglam and Aleph, Sukkim and Gimel, and then we have the bris that they consummate. And I just said all this because it seems to me this is pshat in Velovan Bikesh Lakar Esakol. What does that mean? It means the following. That basically, Lavan is, as I said, this is already found in Chazal. Take the word Lavan and transpose the letters. What do you have? Naval. Remember Naval? Naval who? With the Balash Shmo. Where's that found? In Shmuel, of course, Shmuel Aleph. Who is Naval, the husband of?
Abigail.
Matter of fact, he remains that, even though he disappeared from the scene, he was given 10 days, he died. I'm not getting into all the details, but he is also a similar kind of personality. And essentially, Lavan is a Naval, a scheming, conniving, greedy hustler. While Yaakov really personifies the characteristic traits of Titein and Mesli Yaakov. And therefore, this is the reason why, in answer to your question, Shaya, we, the children of Yaakov, have to cultivate this meat of MS to the nth degree. We can't compromise or even countenance even so-called white lies and any perversion of the truth, because the road down that slippery path can have catastrophic consequences for the future. That's at least pshat in that parak, in that line in the Haggadah. V'lovan bikesh lakar esakol. What did he want to uproot? The midas ha'emes of Yaakov Avinu. You hear what I'm saying? This is one pshat. There is another one I wanted to say, but I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do so. It needs a good half hour. Yes? Which pasuk?
Pasuk?
A parak, lamed alef?
Yeah.
Okay.
The word Asa, does that have any connection with Esau? Was he in any way hinting to Yaakov that he might be?
I don't think so. I mean, the pasuk literally translated, "Long as Hashtani, you don't let me kiss my children. Ata, he scalped Asa." By the way, it's a very difficult pasuk to translate. Did you translate those three words? Ata? Can anyone here translate these three words? If you can, you deserve a Nobel Prize. Ata, he scalped Asa. Anyone have that? Translate. Couldn't translate. Anyone have an English Chumash?
No. Now you looked at what we made. You looked at what we made.
You what?
You looked.
You looked
at what was made. Like what we made. What he made.
What does that mean?
That's not, it's not his scalta.
You
act like
you acted foolishly. Oh. But the word his scalta, of course, comes from the word. It's spelled here. You know, sometimes there are abayim. Generally speaking, Rabbein, Baruch Hashem, Azochet, to have wonderful Talmidim like we have in the Yeshiva Torah Shraga. And so as a result of that, they are the Rabbein are enhanced by the Talmidim. And how do we know that? It's a pasuk which is found in the Mishnah to the Abbas. Mikol Malamdai Hiskalti. Thank you. Who said that? Very good. Who said it? Shaya. Excellent. Mikol Malamdai Hiskalti. But how's the word Hiskalti spelled? With a sin. But sometimes it can be spelled with a samach. You call Malama Hiskalti. From all those I taught, I became what? Naseti Sachal. I became foolish. With a sin the Samach undergo metathesis quite often. But Sachal means someone who's foolish. And Hiskalti with a sin, the Sechel. Here the word is with a sin. Ata Hiskalti Asel. Is that you translate, Eli? Ata Hiskalti Asel? Meaning, just translate the pasuk. You didn't permit me to what? To kiss my sons and my daughters? I'm sorry. Perek Lamadal Pasuk Chavtes. You have acted foolishly. Correct. Very strange, very cumbersome kind of wording. It needs a lot of explanation. I thought he's scalta aso. But I don't think it's referenced to aso. As far as I know, I don't see why he would play a role of aso. Okay, Bikitzer, let me just, yeah.
Before we mentioned in Pasuk, Parak Lamed, the way Yaakov acted, like you said, the way he works hard.
Lamed.
You said, I think it was Lamed.
Lamed Aleph Pasuk Mem, yes.
Yeah.
This is a Rambam. Should I read to the Rambam?
No.
Probably don't trust me.
No. I'm just saying, like, in the beginning of the parsha, Yaakov went to the workers of the town by the well.
Yeah.
Rashi brings down there the same way that he says to them, how can you work, how can you leave work early?
Correct. So, by the way, beautiful what you just said. And you just have related again another, Yaakov is someone who's Ish Emes. And as Ish Emes, he's concerned about their not working the way they're like the pothole crew. I spoke about earlier. Let me just read you. Maybe I'll just end with this Rambam. Rambam Hilchos Sfiros, that really the Rambam is most unbelievable. Maybe it's not a Sfiros. It used to be there. Here it is. The last Rambam in Sfiros, in Perek Gimel, Halacha Zayin. The Rambam says, Kederach Shen Muzah Balabayis Shel Yigzal Skaroni. Just like a Balabayis has to be careful not to in any way engage in Gezel. Means you're talking about a worker. How should a worker work? He should not work, shall we say, in a fashion that they work over there in the potholes. V'ivato ma'at bekan u'ma'at bekan u'motzi kalayom b'mirma. And the whole day is spent in a very deceitful kind of way. Alachayim l'daktik alatzma b'zman. He has to work in a fashion where every moment is accounted for. Shari ikpido al bracha reviyah shabich sabozon shari barachasa. That's the Gemara in brachas. That the poem is part of which bracha? The fourth bracha, which happens to be the Rabbanan. Which fourth bracha are we talking about? The bracha which is called what? Which bracha is that? Atova meitim. V'chein chayev labo v'chol koko. He's obligated to work with all of his strength. Sharei Yaakov atzadik. Omar ki v'chol kochi avarat yezavichen. Unbelievable. This is the ideal of how one should work. The ideal found in Yaakov Avinu with his personality. So it says, Lama Vigish Lakas Akol, I believe that simply one shot, which is very MS, is the fact that Lama wanted to be Oker, the Midas MS of Yaakov Avinu. That's Lama Vigish Lakas Akol. And the truth is that, as you know, I assume you're familiar, Torah is called Torah's MS, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Samo HaKadosh Baruch Hu MS. And the Rav Chaim Volozhin, you heard of Rav Chaim Volozhin? The very famous rabbi, Rabbi Chaim Volozhin. And he was the headmaster of a famous yeshiva called Volozhin. Volozhin probably is the most likely the mother of all yeshivas. So he used to end his tshuvas that he wrote with this language. The language was, he signs Chaim Volozhin, and he signs who is involved in learning Torah's MS. Makadosh Baruch Hu Shechesama MS. That's how we signed his tshuvas. And Lavan represented the very antithesis of MS. And that's probably the most important mida that a person has to learn is MS. Yashrus. Being straight and glut. Not engaging in any kind of deception, any kind of lie, even so-called white lies. All that is, as I said, a slippery slope. The moment a person begins to lie, at that moment, basically, the person is headed, unfortunately, in a direction which could lead him, Rahman al-Islam, to oblivion. And that's the midah of Yaakov Avinu, the midah of Emes. And Lavan is the very opposite, and that's what it means. And the Baal HaGadol says, Lavan b'kish lakas hakol, that's the midah that we have to avoid. And that midah we have to try to cultivate to the ultimate extent is midah of Emes. Halavai, we should be zoche to that midah.